We would like to offer a special welcome to our new sponsor, HelloFresh, America's number one meal kit. Go to HelloFresh.com/WentCold16 and use code WentCold16 for 16 free meals plus free shipping. Enjoy the episode. March 12, 1992. Huntsville, Alabama. SPC Chad Langford, an Army military policeman stationed at the Redstone Arsenal, performs a patrol of the base and sends in a radio call that he is investigating an abandoned vehicle. Shortly thereafter, Chad is found lying in the middle of the road with a gunshot wound to the head, and since the Army believes that Chad was shot with his own weapon, they conclude that he staged an elaborate suicide in order to make it look like he was killed in the line of duty. However, Chad's family notices a number of strange discrepancies which make them think he was murdered over some undercover work involving drugs, but the suicide ruling is never overturned, and Chad's death remains shrouded in mystery. After that, the trail went cold. Hello, everyone, and welcome to our latest episode of The Trail Went Cold. I'm your host, Robin Warder, and this week, we're going to be exploring an odd military-themed mystery which was featured on Unsolved Mysteries, the unexplained 1992 death of Chad Langford. During the early 1990s, Unsolved Mysteries featured a slew of suspicious military-themed suicide cases in which active servicemen supposedly took their own lives, but their families had a hard time believing this, and were certain they had been the victims of foul play. One of their most extensive stories about this issue was the death of Chad Langford, as the show's segment about his alleged suicide ran 18 minutes long. At the time he was killed, Chad was an Army military policeman at the Redstone Arsenal in Alabama, but wound up being shot through the head in an isolated section of the base during a seemingly routine patrol. Even though the Army ruled that Chad's death was a suicide, there were a number of bizarre details, as Chad's ankles were bound with a lanyard, handcuffs were dangling from his left wrist, and his cap was stuffed inside his mouth. And while investigators believe that Chad shot himself with his own gun, the weapon was found lying on the ground beneath his left shoulder, and the actual bullet which passed through his head was never found. The Army concluded that Chad staged a very elaborate suicide in order to make it look like he was murdered, but his friends and family did not buy that explanation. In the months prior to his death, Chad told them that he was working on an undercover operation involving drugs and was worried that his life was in danger. Even though the Army has always maintained that Chad never worked on any such assignments, his loved ones became convinced that this played a role in his death and that a cover-up took place. Regardless of whether you believe this case was a homicide or a suicide, you cannot deny that there were still a number of suspicious discrepancies which have never been adequately explained, and no theory makes 100% complete sense. So we're going to look at both sides on today's episode and try to determine if Chad really was murdered or if the suicide ruling was the correct one all along. However, before we get started, just a quick reminder that The Trail Went Cold is a weekly podcast, which is currently available for download on several platforms, including Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Podcasts, and Spotify. So if you like this podcast, be sure to subscribe to it, and please leave us a rating or review on any of those sites to help spread the word and garner us more exposure. The Trail Went Cold is on Patreon, so if you would like to learn how to support the show, please visit our page at patreon.com/thetrailwentcold. For as little as $1 a month, you can garner access to exclusive rewards, including stickers and thank you cards, early access to episodes, and bonus content. So with all that out of the way, let us now explore the unexplained death of Chad Langford. Our story begins in 1992, and our central figure is 20-year-old Chad Langford. Chad was originally born in Nueces County, Texas, as the only child to parents Jim and Joanne Langford, and the family soon relocated to Elk Creek, California. Jim and Joanne would divorce a few years later, so Chad wound up being raised by his father and paternal grandmother. Following his graduation from high school, Chad immediately enlisted in the United States Army and would be stationed in South Korea for several months, where he earned some good conduct medals. By all accounts, Chad loved serving in the Army, and in June of 1991, following his tour of duty in Korea, Chad joined the military police. He was transferred to the Redstone Arsenal, a nearly 2,000-acre army post built in 1941, which is located in Madison County, Alabama, adjacent to the city of Huntsville. Chad's duties would involve patrol and traffic enforcement, and he currently holds the rank of Specialist, aka SPC. On March the 12th, Chad undertook what should have been a routine patrol of the Redstone Arsenal. Chad performed the first half of the shift alongside another MP, but after 6 p.m., he would patrol the perimeter of the base on his own. At 8.07 p.m., dispatch received a radio call from Chad, who informed them that he was stopping to investigate an abandoned car. However, Chad never revealed any details about the vehicle or its location, and shortly thereafter, there was apparently the sound of some garbled static over the air before Chad's radio suddenly went silent. When Chad did not respond to repeated calls from dispatch, a number of MPs were assigned to go out and perform a search of the base for him. It wasn't long before one of the MPs came across Chad's MP armband, military ID tag, and his portable radio lying in the middle of the road. The items appeared to have been neatly arranged on the pavement, and were next to the entrance of a civilian recreation area which was a part of the Redstone Arsenal. The MP then traveled about a quarter mile down the road and came across Chad's patrol car in an isolated section of the base near the Tennessee River. By this point, nearly 15 minutes had passed since Chad's final radio call. The car's engine was still running, its hazard lights were flashing, and the driver's side door was open. It wasn't long before the MP noticed Chad's body lying in a pool of blood on the road next to the vehicle, so medical assistance was summoned to the scene. It turned out that Chad had received a gunshot wound to the head at point-blank range, but there were a number of bizarre details about how his body was found. Chad's army cap had been stuffed inside his mouth, his handcuffs were dangling from his left wrist, and a set of keys containing the key to the cuffs was clutched in his left hand. A lanyard, which is a cord-like device that attaches an MP's pistol to their uniform, was tied around Chad's ankles, and the wire cord from his patrol car's radar unit was wrapped around his neck. Some messages had also been scrawled in black ink on Chad's left hand. One of them read MAR3, which may have been short for March the 3rd, and the other word looked like the name Robert. Chad's service weapon, a .45 caliber semi-automatic pistol, was lying beneath his left shoulder on the ground, and it turned out that two shots had been fired from it. Even though he had been shot in the head, Chad was still alive when paramedics found him, but while he was rushed to Huntsville Hospital, he died just under 2 hours later. Chad's death marked the first time a military policeman had been killed at the Redstone Arsenal during its 50-year history. Ironically enough, when Chad started his patrol, his supervisor advised him not to go to the isolated section of the base near the Tennessee River because it would take too long for them to send backup units there if anything went wrong. Yet this was the same section where Chad was killed shortly after he sent in his final radio call to dispatch, and even though he had mentioned checking out an abandoned car, no other vehicles were found there. Well, just 2 days after Chad died, a military pathologist officially ruled that his death was a suicide via a self-inflicted gunshot wound. In spite of the unusual circumstances of how he was found, there were no marks on Chad's body to indicate that he had been involved in a struggle, and no apparent evidence of foul play. A pair of .45 caliber shell casings were lying on the ground at the scene, but even though Chad's .45 caliber pistol had been fired twice, no actual bullets were found in Chad's head or anywhere near his body, so it could not be conclusively proven that he was shot with his own gun. Needless to say, Chad's father, Jim Langford, did not believe that his son's death was a suicide and suspected that Chad had been murdered over something he was involved with. Jim claimed that sometime in January of 1992, Chad called him up to inform him that he had started to do some undercover work. Over the course of the next 2 months, Chad continued mentioning this work to his father during their conversations, but seemed to share additional details about what he was doing each time they spoke. Chad referred to his job as a quote-unquote special assignment related to drugs in the neighborhoods outside the Redstone Arsenal, but Jim said that he appeared to sound more progressively frustrated each time they talked. During their last phone conversation, which took place 10 days before Chad's death, he told Jim that he had been receiving anonymous death threats and feared he would be killed if the people he was investigating found out he was an undercover MP. Even though Jim advised his son to get out of this situation, Chad replied that he was unable to do so. Jim told Chad that he should speak with his undercover superior about this, but Chad said he wouldn't be able to get in touch with them for at least 14 days. And of course, Chad wound up dead less than 14 days later. At Jim's insistence, the Army's Criminal Investigation Division, aka the CID, agreed to take a fresh look at Chad's death in order to perform a line-of-duty determination, which is an administrative tool used to determine if a soldier's death resulted from performance of duty and can influence whether or not their loved ones are entitled to death benefits. Well, after several months of investigation, the CID released their final 200-page line-of-duty report in December of 1992 and announced that they had still reached the conclusion that Chad's death was a suicide. The report contained a psychological autopsy, which was a post-mortem evaluation of Chad's mental health. The report was put together by an Army psychologist who had interviewed Chad's friends, family members, and fellow servicemen. Even though Chad was not known to drink or use drugs, and had never been treated for any psychiatric problems, the psychological autopsy concluded that Chad was suffering from a number of mental health issues, including recurrent depression, and it cited quote-unquote narcissistic and obsessive-compulsive traits. The psychologist who put together the autopsy believed that Chad suffered from low self-esteem and was desperate to improve his image, so he decided to stage an elaborate suicide in hopes of making everyone believe he died a heroic death being killed in the line of duty. The CID maintained that there was no record of Chad ever having been involved in any undercover work and suspected that he completely fabricated the story in order to plant the seeds for his family that his life was in danger. On the night of his death, Chad may have placed some of his items, including his radio, armband, and ID tag, in the middle of the road before driving a quarter mile away to send in a phony radio call to dispatch about an abandoned vehicle. He then proceeded to wrap his lanyard around his ankles, wrap the wire cord from the radar unit around his neck, attach his handcuffs to his left wrist, and stuff his army cap inside his mouth before shooting himself with his own .45 caliber pistol. It's possible that the first round fired from his gun was a practice shot in order to give off the false impression that he had been involved in a firefight, and then he proceeded to fire the second round into his own head. Not surprisingly, Chad's loved ones questioned the accuracy of a lot of the information in the psychological autopsy. It stated that Chad became suicidal because he felt he had no one to turn to in order to discuss his problems, but Jim insisted this was untrue, as he spoke with Chad on the phone all the time and always let him know that he could talk to him about anything. There was also some dispute about the autopsy's assessment of Chad's relationship with his former spouse, Roxanne Van Hooser, as she supposedly broke up with him in the weeks prior to his death, and there was speculation that this could have been the breaking point which prompted him to take his own life. However, Roxanne insisted that this was untrue, as she claimed it was Chad who had initiated the breakup. According to Roxanne, the relationship had grown serious enough that they had started shopping for an engagement ring, but one night, while visiting Chad at his barracks, he decided to break up with her completely out of the blue. Chad told Roxanne that he was now so focused on his undercover work that he cannot dedicate enough time to spend with her. Roxanne said that Chad became quite angry and had tears welling up in his eyes before he told her to leave the barracks. In retrospect, Roxanne believed that someone may have influenced Chad's decision to break up with her, as he may have felt it was the best way he could keep her safe and distance her from the dangerous things he was doing. Roxanne claimed that she last saw Chad at the Redstone Arsenal's nightclub 5 days before his death, but was surprised by how he looked. She said that Chad was dressed in black, gang-style clothing, which he did not ordinarily wear, and was surprised to see Chad sporting an earring, even though he often used to poke fun of other men who wore them. According to Roxanne, Chad was hanging out with what she described as quote-unquote rough-looking people, and since she did not recognize them, she wondered if they might have been connected to his undercover work. Another female friend of Chad's would tell investigators that he had once shown her a threatening note he received, which appeared to have gang symbols on them, but no note like this was found in Chad's possessions following his death. One surprising revelation from the line of duty report was an allegation that Chad had been the ringleader of a plot to rob a van containing the payroll from the Redstone Arsenal's post exchange, which is the term used to describe a store at a military installation which sells merchandise and services to military personnel. Even though Chad had no prior criminal record, an MP and two other soldiers had apparently told investigators that he tried to involve them in his plot. Chad and another MP would be escorting the payroll, and the plan was for his accomplices to kill the other MP during the robbery and fire a shot into Chad's bulletproof vest to make it look like he attempted to stop them. The robbery was supposed to take place about a month prior to Chad's death, but the plot fell through when the other soldiers refused to go along with it. Of course, Jim did not believe his son ever would have done anything illegal like that, and suspected that if this robbery plot was real, Chad may have only been pretending to go along with it as part of his undercover work. One other reason the CID was inclined to believe that Chad was suicidal is that on the day of his death, he left phone messages with a number of his friends, which investigators believed were goodbye messages since he was planning to take his own life. But this was once again disputed by Roxanne, who said that Chad left a message on her mother's machine the same day. Even though the message was erased before she could hear it, Roxanne said her mother told her it was nothing more than Chad calling to say hi and ask how she was doing. Chad also never attempted to phone or leave any so-called goodbye messages for his father or grandmother, even though he had a closer relationship with them than anyone. There were a number of other witnesses who spoke to Chad on the day of his death and said that he seemed completely normal, including the MP who had gone on patrol with them until 6 p.m. Chad had also recently started dating a student at Alabama A&M University, and he actually called her from a payphone at the base's civilian recreation area at around 8 o'clock, only minutes before his final radio call to dispatch. The student claimed that Chad made plans to meet her at 11:30 after his shift ended, and heard nothing to indicate that he was planning to kill himself only minutes after their call. Well, even though the line of duty report concluded that Chad's death was a suicide, they still acknowledged that there were a number of odd discrepancies in the original investigation. Like I mentioned earlier, even though Chad had supposedly shot himself with his own .45 caliber pistol, this could not be conclusively proven since no bullets were found at the scene. There was also no blood or brain tissue found on Chad's gun, even though there should have been potential blowback on the pistol if it was fired at his head at point-blank range. A gunpowder residue test was performed on Chad's hands to determine if he had fired a weapon prior to his death, but the results were inconclusive, and testing to find traces of Chad's fingerprints or palm prints on the gun was also inconclusive. Even though Chad was a right-handed shot, his pistol was found lying on the ground beneath his left shoulder, and of course, there was some question about whether the gun could have wound up there if he shot himself. There was also some evidence which could have pointed towards the involvement of an outside party. Fingerprints which did not match Chad were found on his MP armband, military tag, and portable radio, the items discovered on the road about a quarter mile away from his body. The prints also did not match the MP who found these items, but they were not tested against anyone else or identified. Two buttons from Chad's uniform were found lying on the passenger seat of his patrol car, which pointed to signs of a possible struggle, though the CID's explanation is that the paramedics may have ripped open Chad's shirt while administering medical attention and caused the buttons to go flying into the front seat. What also seemed odd is that when Chad's body was found, the Army never informed the Huntsville Police Department or any other civilian law enforcement agencies about his death, even though they could not yet have been certain that foul play didn't take place and that a killer was not on the loose. The most troubling detail was that when Chad's body was found, the gates for the Redstone Arsenal were ordered closed, yet MPs from the base stopped two different men driving two different cars at separate times without detaining them or extensively questioning them. In both cases, the MPs never took down the driver's name or the make, model, or license numbers of their vehicles, even though this went against military regulations, and they were each pulled over only about a mile from the spot from where Chad was killed. One of the drivers was apparently a civilian employee of the base who told the MPs that he had gotten into a fight with his wife and was driving around the premises to, quote-unquote, cool off. The MP took the employee's ID card and left it at the base's MP station, but surprisingly, even though the employee returned to retrieve the card the following morning, no one recorded his name at any point. It was reported that this man may have also worked as a part-time employee at Taco Bell. According to another MP, 3 days before he was killed, Chad had gone to a Taco Bell and spoke to an employee there in an apparent attempt to find a man he, quote-unquote, needed to get money from. Another intriguing detail was that this motorist had apparently been driving a white car, and white paint flecks were found on Chad's pistol, which did not match the paint from his own patrol car. The identity of the second driver who was pulled over by MPs that night was also not recorded, but he apparently drove a black car and was ruled out as having any involvement in Chad's death because he was at work at the time. However, when the Huntsville Times newspaper started covering the story, an anonymous source told them that the second driver's name happened to be Robert, which of course was the same name written on Chad's left hand when his body was found. Anyway, following the completion of the line of duty report, Jim Langford and his ex-wife Joanne each received $51,000 from Chad's life insurance benefits, though Jim would publicly offer a $25,000 reward for anyone who had information about the case, which could lead to an arrest or conviction. Even though Chad's death was still officially considered to be a suicide, the Huntsville Times continued to report on his story to keep it in the spotlight. It eventually captured the attention of Unsolved Mysteries, who produced a lengthy segment about Chad's death for an episode which aired in February of 1993. The show wound up receiving nearly 300 phone tips at its telecenter, which they said was about 10 times more than they were expecting, but most of them were anonymous and did not contain any concrete information. But at the end of the segment, Robert Stack did announce that the Army had recently agreed to reopen the investigation into Chad's death. About 2 months earlier, a man from New Hope, Alabama, had come forward with allegations that Chad was killed because he owed either cocaine or drug money to another Madison County man who had hired someone to murder Chad. The CID never found any evidence to substantiate this witness's story and could not uncover any tangible link between Chad and this Madison County man. Jim Langford did publicly applaud the CID for being more thorough with following this tip than they had been in their previous investigations, but in the end, they informed him that they still believed Chad's death was a suicide and once again closed the case. However, Chad's story would just not go away. In May of 1993, the Philadelphia Inquirer published an extensive story about the suspicious deaths of 14 servicemen from the United States Armed Forces. Even though the military had officially ruled all of these deaths to be suicide or accidental, their families were certain they had been murdered and were pushing for the cases to be reopened. Many of these deaths were believed to be drug-related, and of course, Chad Langford was one of the 14 deceased servicemen to be profiled. Well, the publication of this story garnered so much attention that a number of other families were compelled to come forward and share their accounts of how their loved ones died under suspicious circumstances while serving in the military. As a result, in December of that year, the Philadelphia Inquirer would publish a more extensive 4-part series of articles about this topic titled The Suicide Files, which profiled no less than 40 of these suspicious deaths. The Inquirer asked 4 separate retired military investigators to review 19 of these cases, and they concluded that the evidence did not fully support the official suicide rulings. One of these investigators was an Army veteran named James W. Keefe, who stated, quote, "I'm stunned. If my agents had handed me these kinds of investigations, they'd have another suicide. Mine." End quote. Keefe was asked to look at Chad's case, and he told the Inquirer that he did not believe that the evidence supported a suicide ruling, and referred to Chad's psychological autopsy as, quote-unquote, "the biggest bunch of crap I've ever read." Keefe believed that the original investigators had immediately reached the conclusion that Chad killed himself, and then went on to bend the facts and ignore key evidence in order to fit their narrative. However, following the publication of the Philadelphia Inquirer articles, it sounds like Chad's case quickly faded from the spotlight, and there would not be any new developments in the investigation. So after 3 decades, Chad Langford's death is still officially considered to be a suicide, but the case continues to remain shrouded in controversy. So I guess you could say, the trail went cold. But before we continue, we'd like to send out a special thanks to our new sponsor, HelloFresh. Well, summer has finally arrived, and I don't think it's a stretch to say that figuring out what to make for dinner is not at the top of anyone's summer activity wish list. With all that nice weather outside, why spend so much time with worrying about meal planning when you have HelloFresh, which comes with pre-portioned ingredients that make your cooking so much easier and quicker? And to prevent you from having to spend some time shopping, HelloFresh will deliver mouth-watering, chef-crafted recipes and fresh ingredients directly to your door. And not only is it more convenient than grocery shopping, but it's cheaper too, and 25% less expensive than takeout. I personally just had my first HelloFresh meal of the summer, the Steakhouse Cheeseburgers, which was flavored with gravy and Montreal steak spice, and accompanied by some delicious potato wedges that you can dunk into a zesty side of mayo. Definitely a major step up from your typical fast food cheeseburger, and with all the ingredients and instructions HelloFresh provided, it was very easy to prepare. If you're not in the mood for a burger, HelloFresh has a number of different options on their menu, such as pescatarian and veggie meals. With HelloFresh, you can spend less time on meal preparation, and the majority of your summer doing whatever you want, including listening to your favorite true crime podcasts. So HelloFresh is your recipe for success, so take a bite out of something new with 40 recipes to choose from weekly. Go to HelloFresh.com/WentCold16 and use code WentCold16 for 16 free meals plus free shipping. Once again, that's HelloFresh.com/WentCold16 and the promo code is WentCold16. Thank you and enjoy the rest of this episode. So like I mentioned in the intro, Unsolved Mysteries produced quite a few segments during the early 1990s about suspicious military suicides, but it sounds like there was quite an epidemic in the United States Armed Force during that time period. Those series of articles I just mentioned that were published in the Philadelphia Inquirer in 1993 were pretty eye-opening and showed that Unsolved Mysteries could have done segments about 1 or 2 dozen of these stories. You could probably put together an entire podcast series about this topic. And even though at least some of these deaths were probably suicides all along, they were still not adequately investigated by the military, so you can understand the frustration from the victims' families. I don't have time to talk about all the other featured cases from the Philadelphia Inquirer, but I will mention that in addition to Chad Langford, they did profile another suspicious military suicide that was featured on Unsolved Mysteries, and that's the death of Jeffrey Digman, a Marine captain who was found dead of an apparent self-inflicted gunshot wound inside the bedroom of his home in San Diego, California, in January of 1989. I may cover this one on a future Trail Went Cold episode, but long story short, Digman's family was convinced that his suicide had been staged and that he was murdered because he knew incriminating information about drug activity within the Marines. A year after Chad Langford was profiled on Unsolved Mysteries, he was briefly mentioned in another segment on the show about 2 best friends serving in the Army who supposedly died by suicide just over 2 months apart, Sergeant Billy Ray Hargrove and Sergeant Mike Carmichael. Both men died while stationed in South Korea, and while there doesn't appear to be any direct connection to Chad Langford's case, it's crazy how all their suicides happened to take place during a very narrow window of time. Hargrove died on February the 20th, 1992, Chad died on March the 12th, and then Carmichael died on April the 3rd. Hargrove and Carmichael supposedly hanged themselves, and of course, the prevailing theory from their families is that both suicides were staged, and that Carmichael's murder was the result of him learning incriminating information about Hargrove's murder. Once again, I won't talk too much about this story, since I may cover it on an individual episode of The Trail Went Cold sometime in the future. But even if by chance all these deaths, as well as the dozens of cases mentioned in the Philadelphia Inquirer, were suicides all along, that does seem to point to some sort of systemic issue in the military if so many active servicemen are willing to take their own lives. Okay, I'm going to make one more comparison to another military mystery from the early 1990s which was featured on Unsolved Mysteries and was also covered on episode number 289 of The Trail Went Cold, and that's the disappearance of Army Private Justin Bergwinkle, who vanished after going AWOL from Fort Lewis in Washington and traveling to California in June of 1993. Now obviously, the key difference is that since Justin has never been found, we can't say for certain if he died by suicide, but you can definitely see a number of parallels with Chad Langford's story, as Justin kept telling people that he was working on some sort of secret mission with the military, which may have put his life at risk and paved the way for his disappearance. In retrospect, it seems likely that Justin was fabricating his claims, either because he was suffering from serious mental health issues, or he was disillusioned that his military career wasn't going anywhere, so he wanted to make his friends and family believe he was more important than he really was. Well, the same issue was brought up in Chad Langford's psychological autopsy, as he had been telling his own friends and family about doing undercover work for the Army involving drugs, but the psychologist who reviewed his case believed that Chad's claims had no basis in reality, and he was desperate to improve his own image. If things reached the point where Chad became suicidal, he may have wanted everyone to believe that he was a hero who got murdered in the line of duty and went out in a blaze of glory. Of course, Chad's loved ones did not believe this, and felt that the entire psychological autopsy was pure hogwash, and if you asked me for my thoughts on this issue several years ago, I probably would have said the same thing. But I've now studied enough of these cases to know that suicidal people can be very unpredictable, and that the actions they take once they decide to end their own lives are not always going to be logical. Even when the victim's loved ones insist that they were not suicidal and do not appear to be depressed and never would have done something like this, you can never really know what's going on inside their head. And while the circumstances of Chad's death are certainly strange, there are proven and documented cases of people who have intentionally staged their suicides to look like homicides. One example of this is the suicide of Joe Glinowitz, a lieutenant for the Fox Lake Police Department in Illinois, who was shot to death while on duty in September of 2015. Before he was killed, Glinowitz made a radio call to dispatch and said he was pursuing three suspects, and there was actually a massive manhunt for the supposed cop killers, until it became apparent that Glinowitz fabricated the whole story, and his death was actually a staged suicide. This is pretty much the exact scenario that the CID pushed forward in Chad's case, as they believed that he fabricated his final radio call about the abandoned vehicle and killed himself in a very unusual fashion before backup arrived at the scene. Of course, the key difference is that Joe Glinowitz was facing serious legal trouble for embezzling money at the time of his death, whereas Chad seemed to have an exemplary record with the Army and no apparent motive to do something like this. However, the Glinowitz case just demonstrates that the CID's seemingly absurd theory is not actually unprecedented. So in analyzing these suspicious suicide cases, one thing I always take into account is whether a murder scenario seems a lot more implausible than a suicide scenario. For instance, while it might seem very odd that Chad was found with his army cap stuffed in his mouth, handcuffs dangling from his left wrist, a lanyard wrapped around his ankles, and a cord from a radar unit wrapped around his neck, you have to ask why an outside party would go to the trouble of doing all this stuff if they were planning to kill Chad. Yes, it doesn't make much sense for Chad's MP armband, military ID tag, and portable radio to be found neatly arranged on the road about a quarter mile from his body, but if he was murdered, why would the perpetrator bother to do this? Chad's final radio call to dispatch took place at 8:07 p.m., and his body was found just under 15 minutes later, so if he was murdered, the perpetrator would have had to go to a lot of trouble to stage the scene and escape during a narrow window of time. But on the other hand, if this was a staged suicide, Chad could have already arranged those items on the road and tied himself up before he made his radio call, and then shot himself right after the call ended. All that being said, even if you believe Chad's death was a suicide all along, you cannot deny that the Army's original investigation was not handled well at all, and a lot of mistakes were made, so you can understand why his loved ones would be suspicious and believe that a cover-up took place. I hearken back to the remarks that retired Army investigator James W. Keefe made when he took a fresh look at the case over 1 year later. It seems likely that the Army started out with the assumption that Chad's death was a suicide and attempted to make all the evidence fit their narrative. This is not how these investigations are supposed to work, as you have to start out with the assumption that someone's death was a homicide and only rule that it was a suicide or an accident if the evidence ultimately leads you in that direction. Even if the Army's original ruling was correct and Chad really did kill himself, you cannot deny that there were a number of odd discrepancies which have never been adequately explained, so they did his loved ones a disservice by not properly exploring them. So the big issue I have with the theory that Chad was doing secret undercover work which put his life at risk is that I'm not entirely sure why the Army would select him for an assignment like that. This was the same issue I had with Justin Bergwinkle's claims that he was working on a secret mission, as he was an average soldier at best, who did not possess any particularly special skills, making him an unlikely candidate to be selected for a job like this. In Justin's case, he kept displaying paranoid and erratic behavior in front of his girlfriend in order to give off the impression that this so-called mission was causing him great stress. I can definitely see the parallels between Chad's relationship with his spouse Roxanne, as she also witnessed him experience emotional outbursts and make an abrupt decision to break up with her because he felt his undercover assignment was taking up too much of his time. However, it was interesting to learn that Chad had started dating a university student after his breakup with Roxanne, which doesn't really seem to fit the profile of someone who is so wrapped up in his work that he has no time for a romantic relationship. Roxanne has pushed forward the theory that perhaps Chad's relationship with this other woman wasn't legitimate, and he was only seeing her because she may have had important information related to his undercover investigation, though I do not believe any evidence was found to support this idea. So it does make me wonder if Chad had other reasons for breaking up with Roxanne, and his whole outburst about being stressed by his work was just an act. As you recall, Chad made a phone call to this university student a very short time before his death, in which he made plans to see her later that night after his shift ended. On the surface, that certainly doesn't fit the profile of someone who is planning suicide, but if he wanted to stage his death to look like a homicide, perhaps this call was an intentional attempt to mislead the investigation. During phone calls with his father, Jim, Chad also displayed the same paranoid behavior he had shown towards Roxanne and gave off the appearance that his undercover work was causing him great stress and potentially putting his life at risk. But once again, could this all have been an act? While we know very little about Chad Langford's service record, it sounds like he had been doing quite well, as he had earned some good conduct medals during his tour of duty in South Korea, and as far as I can tell, he never got into any serious trouble or racked up any major disciplinary infractions. Chad stated that he was working on a quote-unquote special assignment involving drug activity in the neighborhood surrounding the Redstone Arsenal, and I suppose that if the Army really wanted one of their MPs to go undercover for something like this, I guess Chad wouldn't be a bad candidate. However, I have to think that this sort of assignment would require extensive training, and I've heard nothing to indicate that Chad went through that, as he was still only 20 years old and pretty inexperienced. Furthermore, if Chad was killed because of something related to his undercover work, why would his death be instantly written off as a suicide? Should there have been a bigger push to find the responsible parties? For an undercover assignment, you'd assume that Chad would be working with a superior, so why didn't this person organize a full-fledged investigation into the murder of his operative? Was corruption involving drugs so rampant around the Redstone Arsenal that the higher-ups could bury the murder of an MP? Remember, the Redstone Arsenal had been around for 50 years at that point, and this marked the first time an MP had been killed while performing active duty at the base, so if this was a homicide, this should have been a pretty big deal. Jim Langford's theory about Chad's death is that he was planning to meet someone about his undercover work at an isolated section of the base, but he wound up being ambushed and killed. The spot was in fairly close proximity to the base's civilian recreation area, meaning that it wasn't exactly a high security location and would have been easily accessible to outsiders. When Chad told Jim he was receiving death threats and he was worried about having his identity exposed, Jim advised him to put an end to his undercover work, Yet Chad claimed this was not an option. I mean, if this was a top-secret mission involving national security, that would be one thing. But why would it be so vitally important that he keep risking his life over drug activity? Yes, I've always been skeptical of Chad's undercover story, and wonder if he might have been overcompensating for the fact that he'd actually gotten himself involved in something illegal. This could explain why he was acting so nervous and paranoid during his conversations with his father, and acting like he had gotten himself so deep into something that he cannot get out. We have the account from Roxanne that she saw Chad hanging around in a nightclub with what she described as quote-unquote rough-looking characters in the days prior to his death. However, I will say that the reenactment of the scene on Unsolved Mysteries is unintentionally funny, because Roxanne is acting like Chad must be part of some gang, because he's wearing black clothing, a backwards baseball cap, and an earring, though he looks more like a member of Marky Mark and the Funky Bunch. Since this was apparently not how Chad usually dressed, and Roxanne did not recognize any of the guys he was with, she took this as a sign that Chad was working undercover, but perhaps the real reason he was with them was because he was involved in something illegal. The biggest allegation that Chad was involved in criminal activity were the interviews conducted by the CID with two soldiers and another MP for the line of duty report, as they claimed that Chad had once orchestrated a robbery plot for the payroll of the base's post exchange. And to make things even more extreme, Chad was apparently planning to have one of the payroll's escorts killed so no witnesses would be left behind. Of course, Chad's loved ones did not believe this story, as I'm sure they did not want to think he was capable of arranging someone's murder, but there is definitely good reason to be skeptical of this whole situation. Granted, we really don't know many specific details, but this whole robbery plot was apparently made weeks before Chad's death, yet none of these other soldiers were willing to say anything until months after the fact. Would these guys really be willing to go on the record and admit they had knowledge of a robbery/murder plot, but never told their superiors about it? Should they have been punished and reprimanded for staying silent about the whole thing? This is just one reason why Chad's family believed that the line of duty report and the psychological autopsy were attempts to perform character assassination on Chad in order to support their suicide narrative. Indeed, even though the psychological autopsy was put together after interviews with Chad's friends, family, and fellow servicemen, Jim seemed to imply during his Unsolved Mysteries interview that his input consisted of nothing more than a 10-minute phone conversation with the Army psychologist. So this is why Jim believes that the psychological autopsy's conclusion about Chad being suicidal was based on inaccurate information and limited interaction with the people who knew him best. Now, this tidbit was left out of the Unsolved Mysteries segment, and I've only seen it mentioned in an extensive article about the case in the Huntsville Times, but I find it extremely interesting that when Chad started out his patrol on the night of his death, his supervisor advised him not to go out to the isolated section of the base near the Tennessee River because it would take too long for backup units to arrive if something went wrong while he was alone. Yet for reasons unknown, Chad went out there anyway, and this is the exact location he wound up being killed. Jim's theory was that Chad was ambushed when he went to meet someone about his undercover work, and if this is accurate, then that would definitely be an ideal location for a secret meeting where they were unlikely to be interrupted. But on the other hand, if Chad wanted to stage an elaborate suicide, this would be the perfect spot to go through with it without being seen, and he would have had enough time to send in a phony radio call and kill himself before backup arrived. All that being said, if Chad wanted to give off the false impression he was killed in the line of duty, why not say something more than he was stopping to check out an abandoned vehicle? After all, Joe Glinowitz specifically stated that he was pursuing three suspects during his final radio call, which is why the authorities initially believed that he had been ambushed and murdered. However, if Chad did have a secret meeting set up out there, he could have called in a phony report about an abandoned vehicle to account for his whereabouts during that time period. If Chad was murdered, I guess an alternate explanation is that it had nothing to do with any undercover assignment he was working on. Perhaps Chad did come across a vehicle parked out there, but had unknowingly stumbled across someone performing illegal activity, such as drug dealing, so they responded by killing him. But then again, if Chad was killed in a panic because he saw something, I have to think that the shooter's first response would be to hightail out of the area as quickly as possible, and they wouldn't go to the trouble of binding his ankles, wrapping a wire cord around his neck, and stuffing his cap inside his mouth. When you look at the circumstances of how Chad died, the only way a foul play scenario makes sense is if someone had been planning to restrain him and abduct him from the scene, which is why they wrapped the lanyard around his ankles and attached his own handcuffs to his left hand. If Chad put up a struggle or attempted to make a break for it, the perpetrator may have shot him in the head before fleeing the scene. However, the one detail which really goes against an abduction and murder scenario is the fact that Chad's MP armband, military ID tag, and radio were found neatly arranged on the road a quarter mile away. And it's worth mentioning that the ID tag and the armband did not look like they had been ripped from Chad's uniform by force, and it really looked like he had taken those items off on his own and placed them there. But ironically enough, even though these items appeared to be the strongest pieces of evidence to suggest a staged suicide, they also contained evidence pointing towards the involvement of an outside party, since the items had fingerprints on them which did not match Chad. The army double-checked to ensure that the prints did not belong to the MP who found these items, but it's very frustrating that no attempt was made to compare the prints to anyone else. If another person handled those items prior to Chad going on patrol, then that could explain the presence of their fingerprints, but it really appears that since the army automatically wrote off Chad's death as a suicide, they couldn't be bothered to check. Even though investigators stated that they found no evidence to indicate that Chad had been in a struggle prior to his death, one piece of evidence which might go against that were the presence of two buttons from his uniform on the passenger seat of his patrol car. Yes, the Army's explanation that the buttons went flying there after paramedics ripped open Chad's shirt is completely absurd, but how can we be certain that Chad didn't rip off those buttons on his own, intentionally or otherwise, before he stepped out of the car? The one detail which has been cited as the biggest piece of evidence that Chad's death wasn't a suicide is the fact that his gun was found lying on the road underneath his left shoulder. On the surface, it might seem impossible that the gun could wind up there if he shot himself in the head, but that's not necessarily the case. The Unsolved Mysteries segment shows a reenactment of a scenario where Chad shoots himself in the head while holding his gun in his right hand while he's kneeled down on the pavement. Under these circumstances, it does seem hard to believe that his gun would wind up under his left shoulder, but we have no idea if this is how things actually played out. If Chad actually shot himself while in a standing position, then it's not impossible that his gun could have fallen out of his hand and landed on the pavement behind him before his body collapsed on top of it. Of course, the physics of the situation would indicate that Chad needed to hold the gun close to his head when he fired the fatal shot at point-blank range, so it is a bit surprising that no blood or brain matter was found on the pistol. You'd also expect to find Chad's fingerprints on the weapon and gunshot residue on his hands, but let's not forget those tests were merely inconclusive and did not completely rule out the possibility that he fired a gun, so anything's possible. But I do find it odd that even though a pair of 45 shell casings were at the scene, no actual bullets could be found anywhere, so it was never conclusively proven if the fatal shot came from Chad's own 45. This discrepancy suggests to me that either A, if someone from the army was involved in the conspiracy to murder Chad, they could have found the bullets and disposed of them in order to cover up the fact that Chad was shot with a completely different gun, or B, the army just did a very half-assed job at securing the crime scene and searching the area, which is why the bullets were never recovered. And, well, given how the rest of the investigation was carried out, scenario B seems more plausible. Remember, it was established that Chad's gun had been fired twice, so unless an outside party somehow got a hold of the weapon and used it to shoot Chad in the head, what are the odds that additional shots were fired from another gun, and those bullets were also not found? Of course, one of the biggest red flags with this whole situation is that MPs pulled over two vehicles at the Redstone Arsenal about a mile away from the spot where Chad's body was found, but neither of the drivers were detained or questioned, and their names and information about their vehicles were never taken down on the record. Hell, one of these drivers was a civilian employee from the base who had his ID badge taken and held overnight before he picked it back up, so it's just astonishing to me that his name was never recorded anywhere. You also have to couple in the fact that news of Chad's death had already been broadcast over the radio by the time these two drivers were pulled over, and there was no way of knowing at that point if a homicide or a suicide took place. So even if these drivers were completely innocent, they should have at least been detained and properly vetted before they were eliminated as suspects. The situation could definitely point to the army being complicit in Chad's murder and orchestrating a cover-up to protect the perpetrators, but I guess it could also simply be a case of good old-fashioned indifference and incompetence. It's been alleged that one of these drivers may have been named Robert, which is all the more suspicious, since the name Robert appeared to have been written on Chad's left hand, alongside what appeared to be the words, March the 3rd. While Chad may have written Robert there because he was planning to meet someone by that name, but it is odd that he would write down March the 3rd, since that date was already 9 days beforehand. But for all we know, maybe the message MAR3 meant something else, or perhaps Chad just decided to write random cryptic messages on his hand in order to throw off the investigation. For another documented example of an intentionally staged suicide, there's the case of Bill Sparkman, a Kentucky man suffering from cancer who killed himself in September of 2009 and attempted to make his death look like a homicide in hopes that it would allow his family to collect the insurance money. The word Fed was written in felt-tip marker on Sparkman's chest, which caused a lot of initial speculation about what it could possibly mean, but the orientation of how the text was written led investigators to conclude that Sparkman wrote it himself. In the end, the word Fed had no meaning whatsoever, and was also written there for the express purpose of confusing the investigation. So who's to say that Chad couldn't have done the same thing? This is a really difficult case in which to come up with an airtight theory about what happened, and while there are certain details that make me lean towards suicide, I cannot deny that there are just as many oddities which are hard to adequately explain. Regardless of whether this was a homicide or suicide, I am very skeptical about the idea that Chad was doing secret undercover work for the army, but I also don't rule out the possibility that he could have been murdered for other reasons. If he was the victim of foul play, I do think Chad probably went to that isolated location of the base for a secret meeting before he was killed, and given the complicated nature of how Chad's body was bound, I suspect that more than one person had to be involved. Even if the army botched the investigation and incorrectly ruled Chad's death to be a suicide, it may not have been done because they were orchestrating a conspiracy to cover the whole thing up. It may have simply just been a case of tunnel vision. When they found Chad's .45 pistol under his body and two .45 caliber casings at the scene, they automatically came to the conclusion that he was the victim of a self-inflicted gunshot wound and ignored all evidence which pointed away from that scenario. Once again, Chad's death marked the first time that an NP had been killed on the grounds of the Redstone Arsenal in the base's 50-year history, and I'm sure they did not want to give off the outward impression that someone could breach their security and do that. Looking through the 40 suspicious suicides that were documented in those Philadelphia Inquirer articles, I'm certainly not going to say that every single one of them was a homicide that was covered up, but at the very least, the recurring theme in all these stories seemed to be a lackluster investigation from the military, who did not put much effort in trying to account for a lot of the strange discrepancies in these cases. Regardless of whether Chad's death was a homicide or suicide, it is a shame that even though his story started getting a lot of exposure from media outlets such as Unsolved Mysteries, the Huntsville Times, and the Philadelphia Inquirer, it just seemed to completely drop off the radar after 1993. For many years, I was absolutely certain that Chad was the victim of foul play, but I've since learned so much more about mental health and a person's capability for staging elaborate suicides, so I cannot completely write off the possibility. If Chad was murdered, it does not sound like any solid suspects have popped up on the radar these past 3 decades, and while there are definitely things about the foul play theory which don't make any sense, what I do know is that Chad's loved ones were betrayed by the shoddy nature of the original investigation and deserve some more conclusive answers. So if you happen to have any information about the death of Chad Langford, please contact the appropriate authorities. But if you just have your own thoughts about what happened, feel free to leave me a comment or send me an email to robin.warder@icloud.com. That's robin.warder@icloud.com. Another reminder that The Trail Went Cold is on Patreon, so please visit patreon.com/thetrailwentcold to learn how you can support our podcast and become eligible for some pretty neat rewards. This past month, I released an episode about the 1947 disappearance of Army Lieutenant Ray Hickingbotham, a military mystery which has some similarities to the Chad Langford case. It's a Cold War-era story which was also featured on Unsolved Mysteries, and explored the possibility that he was recruited by the government to start a new life under a new identity in order to perform some top-secret work for them. I've also dropped an exclusive bonus episode from my spin-off podcast, The Pathwind Chili, in which myself and my two co-hosts, Jules and Ashley, discuss the disappearances of Michael and Chucky Palmer, a pair of brothers who went missing 10 years apart at different locations in Alaska. And for our patrons in Tier 3, I recorded another new audio commentary track, which can be played over a classic episode of Unsolved Mysteries. I'd also like to give a shout-out to our most recent listeners who have signed up with us on Patreon this week, and they are Tracy S., Nicole LP., and John in New Hampshire. Thank you all so much for your support. I also wanted to mention that I'll be appearing later this year on Podcast Row at CrimeCon, which is being held from September the 22nd to the 24th at the World Center Marriott in Orlando, Florida. Our podcast has a specialized promo code, which can be used to get a 10% discount on tickets, so in order to purchase them, you can visit crimecon.com and use the promo code COOL23. Once again, for a 10% discount, use COOL23. In addition, The Trail Went Cold will be appearing at the True Crime Podcast Festival, which is taking place from August the 25th to the 27th at the DoubleTree by Hilton Hotel in Austin, Texas. We've got a specialized promo code which you can use in order to get a 15% discount on tickets to the event, so if you would like to purchase tickets, please visit their website at truecrimepodcastfestival.com and use our promo code TRAIL. Once again, that's truecrimepodcastfestival.com and the promo code is TRAIL. I just wanted to give another shout-out to my supporters at the Unsolved Mysteries message board at the Sitcoms Online Forum and the Unresolved Mysteries subreddit. I need to provide a big thanks to Miguel Foote, who edits and assembles this podcast together for me, and Vince Nitro, who composes the eerie music you hear on every episode. If you haven't already, you can like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, or leave us a rating or review on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Podcasts, or Spotify. So have yourselves a great week and join us next Wednesday for another brand new episode of The Trail Went Cold. ¶¶